Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer, and we have a busy show for you tonight.
As I tried to interpret what was driving these various and separate policies, certain common features became obvious, and a clear pattern emerged. In every case, there was a determined disinterest in the facts, an inflexible insistence on carrying out preconceived policies regardless of the evidence concerning what might work and what clearly would not work. First the verdict, then the trial. Third, there is in each area a consistent bias favoring the wealthy at the expense of the broader public interest, and to avoid any accountability to the people, to the Congress, to the courts, or to the press. And in each case, there has been a disturbing willingness to misrepresent the true nature of the policy involved and its real implications. And no matter what the issue, it is now clear that in every instance, the administration has resorted to the language and politics of fear in order to short-circuit the debate and drive the public agenda without regard to the evidence or the facts or the public interest.
Okay, that was Al Gore, and he was speaking about the Iraq war, but I feel it. That speech has a lot of correlations to the war on drugs as well. But we're proud to have with us tonight on Cultural Baggage Houston Council Member Ada Edwards. She was elected in 2001 and again in 2003 to Houston City Council District D. Now, she's a humanitarian. She fights for the rights of all people, a spiritual leader, a pillar in our community, and a talented speaker. And we're very proud to have her with us here today.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Ada, I saw an article came out in last week's Chronicle that really caught my attention.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very telling situation going on about the Houston Crime Lab and what happened to thousands of people based on that evidence.
Right. It's something that is kind of symbolic of a lot of crime labs. Unfortunately, it's not just the Houston Crime Lab. That's one we have some control over. It's also an issue statewide. But what's regarding the Houston Crime Lab, there's been a lot of issues regarding credentializing of the people who work there, their testimonies at various courts and so forth. Josiah Sutton, probably the most recent telling example of a young man who spent, I think, 6 years in prison because of the work that was done at the crime lab. Because of those incidences and because of the backlog of rape cases that had just were backlogged and the overall conditions of the crime lab, and because of what I saw as a miscarriage of justice in my layperson's opinion, when the state uses crime lab DNA experts and then say a defense person may not have the money or opportunities to get a crime lab expert or DNA expert to testify on his or her behalf, I think that's an injustice. So that was one issue. But the larger issue for me as an elected official or as an elected representative was to make sure that people who are representing a governmental agency are in fact giving information that is true and accurate.
Exactly right.
And because you can't just send somebody to jail or to prison and then just say, my bad, and just keep right on going. In my opinion, I think when you have those incidences like what happened in Tulia, I think that's a criminal offense.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion. But what had happened today in Judge Crocker's court was that she agreed with us and the motion that we filed that there was probable cause, that there was aggravated perjury that needed to be investigated more fully and completely. And so the motion for a court of inquiry regarding some specific issues regarding the crime lab was granted today in Judge Crocker's court. And what that means is this will be the first court of inquiry in this region since 1962.
Wow.
That tells you how rare this type of situation is. And so we're excited. We don't know where it's going to lead to. I'm not necessarily looking for persecution, but I'm looking for an investigation of a process that has impacted thousands of citizens' lives and their future and their whole world. And I think that it is incumbent upon elected officials to make sure that the process is open and transparent. And I think the Court of Inquiry at least gives us the opportunity to try to have that happen.
I think you're right. Now, does this new ruling bypass or disallow the district attorney to do this investigation?
There's a part of it that they were asking that the DA be recused because of what we are asserting is a conflict of interest. Yes. And so we're asking, but that is for the judge to decide if there would be an independent investigator, and that's what we're calling for as well. But that piece has not been decided.
All right. Now, it's been my understanding that you mentioned Josiah Sutton
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as being the telling example,
mm-hmm.
but there are dozens of
cases
that are currently mm-hmm. shown to be lacking the full evidence that
mm-hmm,
was presented
mm-hmm.
to court. Is there not a criminal penalty for those who have, in effect, perjured themselves?
I'm not really clear. I'm not sure. I think that there should be. If it were you or me, if we committed perjury, you'd damn skippy, there would be a criminal indictment of some type. But I'm not really sure. I'm not probably the best person to ask that question. But the attorneys that are handling that can get you in touch with them, and they can give you a more full and complete answer.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if it looks like a duck and walks like
yeah.
a duck, there's a good chance mm-hmm. it's a duck, isn't it?
But it's interesting to me. I'm learning a lot about this whole issue of perjury, and if you as a layperson perjurize yourself, what the penalty is, and then if you're as an official of the court or of that ilk, there's seems like a whole different standard, and this is very curious. This is going to be a very very informative learning experience for me as well,
and for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some stories that also broke in the Chronicle over the last week. One mm-hmm. had to do with the fact that Texas now leads the nation and the world
mm-hmm.
in the imprisoning of our citizens.
Oh, we've been doing that for a long time.
Yes, we have.
We've been the lead in that for a long time. At one point in time, even during the height of apartheid, Texas had more, had executed more people and so forth. Even during the grievous issue of the Holocaust that was going on in South Africa, we were still in the lead.
Wow.
Yeah.
And John Whitmire, in another story, indicates that we may have another prison boom imminent
mm-hmm.
because we have nowhere to put these prisoners.
Right. Well, to me, it's kind of like a society, and this is just my opinion, a society can do two things with their young population. They can either educate and train them to be productive workers, or they can use them as a labor pool. And the prison population is currently being used as a slave labor pool, in my opinion.
Well, no.
And you can tell by the number of industries that use prison labor, from telemarketers to people that you call for account services on your account. And these people are not paid living wage and health benefits and so forth. It's slave labor. You can call it whatever you want to. Just because they're not picking cotton does not mean that the result is not the same. Industries are being built upon the backs of young people. The average age, I'm told, in TDC is 23 years of age.
Mm.
And the most of those young people come from the Houston, Harris County area in TDC.
Yes, ma'am.
And of that population, the largest amount comes from the 3rd Ward, 5th Ward area, primarily Hispanic and black and poor white. And you can, as I said, in my opinion, you can make a decision in a society to either educate your young people or use them for labor. And slave labor is what they're used for. Prisons are now, as I understand, one of the leading or the leaders on the stock exchange. It's one of the fastest growing industries in this country.
Mm.
And then, Dean, when you look at the fact that 4th grade inner city reading scores are used as predictors for where they need to build private prisons.
Mm.
Does that give you an insight as how we're actually, once again, in my opinion, how we're actually building the labor pool for this prison system?
Sure. And the children of those that are incarcerated are lacking, support.
Most of them have no educational background, no infrastructure, social infrastructure in their homes and so forth. So there's a whole little, and I don't call it a conspiracy because it's being done right in front of our faces at 12 noon. So I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think that we as a community have decided to become what I call undoubted co-conspirators in our own demise, because we're not doing anything about it. We're not saying anything. We're not making any noise about it.
Yes.
And so I applaud the work that you're doing here and trying to at least get people the information, and they can make the decision. If you want to be a contented slave, then make that a conscious decision. Don't just wind up being that.
That's right. That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
In line with what you said about the inmate slave labor, so to speak. Here's a story I picked up from the Associated Press. I'll read it. Inmate labor is saving Hale County a bundle on a new home for two district courts. Jail inmates and adults on probation have been remodeling a 35,000 square foot Sears building. Officials say the inmates have saved the county $155,000 to $200,000.
Mm-hmm. And those same inmates, when they get out, when they try to get an apartment or when they try to rent an apartment or to get a job, that labor doesn't count for diddly squat. It would be different I wouldn't say it'd be different, but I could even understand it more readily if they say, okay, Ada Edwards, when you go to prison, you're going to do this. And when I get out of prison, I then get a certificate that says I am now a journeyman to plumber, or you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Or I have these skills that I've now acquired. But I don't get any kind of certification, no type of credit. I don't get nothing.
Right.
I just walk out.
As our good friend Ray Hill often points out, that the when it's done, they get $50 or a bus ticket.
Yeah, whatever they get.
And expected to survive in this economy.
And then plus the fact that you continue to feed into it because you don't even give them the opportunity. And I'm not saying that everyone who's in prison is there on a bum rap or wants to be rehabilitated. But those who do, they don't even have the opportunity to.
Right.
Because they can't get past the mistake that they supposedly have paid their debt for. And so, to me, as I say, a lot of people say it's a conspiracy. I don't see it as a conspiracy. Like I said, they're doing it straight up at high noon, right in front of our faces. And I'm just saying that I would hope at some point in time we get tired of it.
Well, now, reading near the end of this article, it was in the Chronicle, you said that something that you yourself describe as a last-ditch effort to examine the credibility of the Harris County criminal justice system.
This is one of the last-ditch efforts that I know of, Dean, that gives us the opportunity to have a public, transparent hearing that is not controlled by vested interests, especially if we can get an independent investigator and not the DA's office, because I think personally they're too close to the issue. So for me, this is one of the last efforts that I know about that we can, through a process that deals with finding evidence and being objective and not going after a witch hunt or anything, and that deals with process, not with personalities, but with process. How do we change this so that this doesn't keep happening? And so, as far as I know, there might be some efforts. I'm sure there's always something out there, but I'm not aware of it. That gives a kind of openness to the community and to the institution known as the City of Houston to change the things that are causing this to happen. We can look at the issue of accreditation. We can look at those things, and that's all well and good. But at the end of the day, I think the public is deserving of a full explanation of what the hell went on.
Right.
And like I said, it's even bigger than this, than Houston, City of Houston or Harris County. It's also statewide. The state DNA labs are under scrutiny for the same types of issues.
Sure, the Department of Public Safety
was
to be overseeing our lab, and they're found lacking.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and I'm sure that a lot of it is due to this is all kind of relatively new science. This isn't really like CIS Miami that you see on television. It might be, I don't know, but I would dare
say
it's
probably.
It could be. Whenever there's humans involved, there's frailties involved. And I think that when you have the extraordinary authority and responsibility to dictate whether someone is going to prison on your say so or based on your opinion, then you also have the extraordinary accountability to own up for what you say.
Indeed, indeed. You know, I once again, I want to thank you for coming down here. I've been trying to publicize and make note of the Project Houston, as I call it. I want to educate all our elected officials. I want everybody to read from the same page. And there's a lot of information that many of the other politicians need to become aware of. And I'm hoping that, you know, through your joining forces with me here, that you know, we can begin that process, because all we need to do is talk about these problems and they will solve themselves once we see them.
Well, you have more hope and vision than I do. I know I'm from California, and I know California even passed the law regarding medical marijuana, and it's still being challenged and so forth. I unfortunately don't have all of it. I know bits and pieces. I know the issues of the drug war, I think, is different a little bit from what you're talking about. But the drug war is not a war against drugs. I think it's a war against poor people. And those poor people can be black, white, green, chartreuse, or whatever. I think we're in this country, we're moving more to a class elitist position. You know, them that's got get, them that don't got need to get going. And so we have to really kind of look at what this quote-unquote drug war is really all about. And it's not about stopping drugs, because we've had more drugs come into this country since the drug war than we've had the whole thing with Noriega in Panama. you know, we've had more drugs now coming through that area since he's been in federal prison, where I understand he's getting ready to be let out. But this man was used as the reason why we had to kill 25,000 plus people in Panama.
Right. Buried them in mass graves.
And now all of a sudden, you ask people today, who is Noriega? Where is he? And they go like, who are you talking about?
Right.
And I'm going like, we killed 25,000 people. Known people.
Yes.
We blew up homes and so forth. And we lost American citizens too, I'm sure.
Yes, ma'am.
So this whole thing of how we're fighting the drug war, but at the same time, you know, they can find out everything about me, but they can't find all these drugs that are I don't believe it.
No, I agree with you. Well, Councilwoman Ada Edwards, I appreciate you coming down here. I have a couple of other guests. We're going to talk about a push to alert our elected officials in the U.S. Congress to the need to stop funding the DEA to stop arresting medical marijuana patients. And I want to invite you to join us if you would like, but we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Aaron Houston and Chris Crane.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, cirrhosis, psychosis, and dementia. The number one contributor to domestic violence and deaths on American highways. Time's up. The answer, beer. Tax regulated and freely available in all non-Muslim countries.
Dr. Leo Sigueroa from Laredo, Texas. I'm the chairman of the Council for Scientific Affairs for the Texas Medical Association.
You guys are now supporting the patient and doctor's rights to discuss medical marijuana.
Most assuredly, Mr. Becker, the Council for Scientific Affairs and the Texas Medical Association definitely support the sanctity of the physician-patient relationship, and that implies, of course, that they should be able to discuss without fear of recrimination any aspect of patient care. Shouldn't be limited to just that, but anything that would improve or help the patient's health should be able to be discussed without fear of somebody coming down and, you know, jumping on you for that.
Another provision would tend to indicate that you guys would support additional research into the use of medical marijuana.
Not that we would, but we definitely encourage additional research into the use of any medication. In this case, we're of course talking about medicinal marijuana. There is some anecdotal evidence that medicinal marijuana has helped in some cases. But, you know, as physicians, we're scientists. We should be human beings first. We're scientists. And you have to show the proof. It's medicinal marijuana that made something better then, you know, then that's something that should be able to be used for whatever that condition is. We have to find a way to be able to administer it that is not detrimental to the person who's using it. You have to understand that a lot of physicians are uncomfortable. They're scared if the government's going to come down and jump on them for doing what they believe to be something that's appropriate for their patient, but it's against the law. You know, they're scared to death they're going to go to jail.
This whole drug war is run on fear through the press, through the medical associations, and to the politicians. They're afraid to touch this third rail for fear of being seen as soft on crime.
Well, or advocating something that, of course, has been taboo in society for so long. Evidence-based medicine is we're learning a lot. You know, by taking this attitude or this stance, a lot of things that were done before, we're finding out, you know what, that wasn't necessarily the best thing to do. And, you know, not that it was horrible to do it, because that was the practice of medicine in those days. But now it's, you know, you can prove that something works a certain way and it does this and that and the other and really helps the patient, well, then by all means you need to do it.
Okay, if you've been listening to the 420s yesterday and today, in fact all last week, we've been talking about the fact that on June 4th there's going to be a major push to educate and join forces with, if you will, our elected officials in the U.S. Congress so that they'll stop the funding of the DEA and the arresting of medical marijuana patients. And in that regard, we have online with us from D.C., I believe, both. We have Chris Crane of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and we have Aaron Houston from MPP. It looks like we have Chris online. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Dean. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Aaron, are you with us?
I am.
Hello, Aaron. I want to thank both you gentlemen for taking time out of your day to be with us here on Cultural Baggage. And if you will, Chris, start us off. What is this June 4th all about?
Well, basically, you know, last year there was an amendment introduced to the Criminal Justice Appropriations Bill, which basically funds the Justice Department, which would have zero funded the Justice Department and DEA from taking any actions in the states with medical marijuana laws. And that's going to be coming up again, likely sometime at the end of June, we hope. And so the whole idea is on June 4th, we're going to have people at 110 congressional districts handing out flyers about the upcoming Hinchey vote, with the hopes of educating some of these congressmen about the vote and you know what it's all about.
Okay, and Aaron Houston, you're with the Marijuana Policy Project. You guys have combined forces with NORML and the Drug Policy Alliance. Tell us what's going on, why you guys have done this.
Well, Dean, we're spearheading the effort. The Marijuana Policy Project is spearheading this effort that Chris mentioned, of course, is in excess of 110 congressional districts around the country. And our hope is that we can combine our forces to show the Congress people who either voted no on the Hinchey Amendment to the Commerce Justice State Appropriations Bill last year, which, as Chris mentioned, would have defunded the DEA from spending any money to raid or arrest medical marijuana patients, and leverage our considerable volunteer power and grassroots efforts to show those persons who either voted against the amendment or didn't vote on the amendment the critical necessity to protect medical marijuana patients who have their doctor's recommendation to use medical marijuana in the states where medical marijuana is allowed.
You know, I have paid attention to the fact that just this past weekend, or I guess it's two weekends ago, the International Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics was held, and there were some astounding facts presented there. I guess what I'm trying to say is, why don't these elected officials hear this news?
Well, that's a good question, Dean. 80% of the country, according to a CNN Time survey that was conducted in October of 2002, support medical marijuana. According to the survey, 80% of the country supports medical marijuana for seriously ill people who have their doctor's recommendation to use the medicine. And unfortunately, some elected officials are a step behind what most people already know, and that is that it's cruel and inhumane to deny people with AIDS wasting syndrome and people who are suffering from the effects of chemotherapy treatment the only medicine that helps them, medical marijuana in some cases. The public is I think, telling their elected officials that this is no longer acceptable. And that's what June 4th is really about, Dean. It's about showing the elected officials in Congress that they can no longer ignore the issue of medical marijuana, and that a considerable grassroots presence will be brought to bear on members who do not show compassion for seriously ill people by supporting the Hinchey Amendment to the Commerce Justice State Appropriations Bill.
Absolutely right. Now, if we take time and we look back at the history, 700,000 people arrested every year for marijuana charges, and you multiply that times the 20 or 30 years of this drug war, the full bore drug war, there's been, you know, tens of millions of people arrested for marijuana. And what does that do to a person's, you know, history? As Ada Edwards said earlier, there impacts their credit, their job, their schooling, etc.
Well, I think that's exactly right. That's a great point. I mean, we have 700,000 people on average a year arrested for marijuana charges, and over 80%, actually last year was closer to 90% of those were for simple possession alone. That's an astounding figure when you think about it. These are you're talking about almost 700,000 people whose lives were needlessly ruined, or at the very least set back. You know, these are people who are going to have criminal records, who had to go through the process of hiring a lawyer, of paying lawyer fees, of in many cases losing their jobs, of having their children taken away. I mean, it's an unbelievable. It's really an unbelievable punishment for the crime of smoking marijuana. Most of these people, particularly those arrested for possession, are people who will never commit any crime other than the quote unquote crime of marijuana possession, and it's an absolute waste of law enforcement resources.
Now, if people wanted to learn more about what they can do in this effort to contact their congressman, where would they learn more? First, Chris.
Very simply, they can either log on to normal.org, they can log on to mpp.org, they can log on to drugpolicy.org. All of us have information on the front page of our websites about this action. We have email addresses listed where they can contact either myself or Aaron Houston or somebody at the Drug Policy Alliance, and we'll get somebody in touch with them and send them the flyers they need to participate in this action. And if they're not available to stand outside their district office and flyer, they certainly can log on to any of our websites and send a letter to their congressman urging them to vote in favor of the Hinchey Amendment when it does come up for vote.
Thank you, Chris. Now, Aaron, we got about 20 seconds, it looks like. If you would, Aaron, tell us again what's going to happen June 4th, and will this proceed from that date to try to make an impact?
Oh, absolutely, yes. June 4th is really the kickoff of a grassroots campaign that we will have ongoing throughout the summertime to get constituents in touch with their their respective congresspersons in the districts where congresspersons did either not vote for the Hinchey Amendment or failed to vote during the vote last year.
All right, gentlemen, we're out of time. I got to remind everybody out there, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at Pacifica Studios of KPFT in Houston,